try it again. We'll see if we got it going. All right, we do? All right. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, today's message is entitled, A Man of No Equal, A Study in Grace, Law Number 1, Part 7C. And hopefully we're going to move on to Law Number 2 next week, but we'll see. Want to very quickly, I gave you, if you didn't have your notes from last week, I wanted to give you a copy of the notes filled in. Because last week, basically, we dealt with just the first, what I'm calling building block, number one. And the building block is this. The objective of the gospel is transformation. Now, I asked the question, how many of you want to live the Christian life? And most everybody in the room raised their hand. And then I said, well, what plan do you have for living the Christian life? And nobody was able to give me one. Well, here's the problem with that. When we fail to plan, then we have planned to fail. But somehow or another, it seems to be against our thinking that we need a plan for living the Christian life. Well, let me ask you this. Are you living the Christian life as well as you want to? Well, then maybe what we need is a plan if we're not. Now, Paul says to us in 1 Corinthians 9, 24 through 27, he talks about it like as a boxer, as he's not like a boxer who beats the air. He's not like a runner who doesn't run with a purpose, that when a runner runs, he runs with a definitive purpose in mind, and that in a foot race, that there's only one winner, and that winner gets a corruptible crown, but each of us are involved in a race for a crown that's incorruptible. But Paul finishes up 1 Corinthians 9 in the 27th verse saying that he buffets his own body and he disciplines himself so that after having shared the gospel with others, he himself does not become a castaway or does not make it to the end of the race. And I asked the question, why would Paul and why should each of us have this same fear? And the answer is because the outside is easy to fix. The outside is easy to fix. It's the inside that is so difficult. 90% of Levitical law writings deal with only three subjects: circumcision, dietary commands, and keeping the Sabbath. But yet, none of us would say that those three things are the heart of the gospel. When they came to Jesus and said, what is the heart of the gospel, or the heart of the law? Jesus said, thou shalt love the Lord thy God. And then you should love your neighbor as yourself. That's the heart of what it is that we are called to. Yet, we have what I defined as identity markers or boundary markers. Instead of, the Bible clearly says to us, they will know we are Christians by our... But we have exchanged what the correct answer is for by our suits and ties. By our bumper stickers. By our children, you know, not running in church. By the TVs we own or don't own. The programs we watch or don't watch. The music we listen to or don't listen to. We have all of these boundary markers, identity markers, that we identify whether or not someone is a believer. And yet, if they go to church and attend Sunday school and been coming here all their lives and their grandparents went here and, you know, they've not murdered anybody and they haven't robbed a bank, they're Christians, but they may be using church as the place to spread gossip. And you know, more people are offended at the sin of homosexuality than they are at the sin of gossip, and yet the Bible has five times as much to say about gossip as it does about homosexuality. But as long as they're wearing the right clothes and saying what I call the Christian speakeasy, bless God, but be sure and say it at the right time. And as long as they lie about the right things, how you doing? Fine. I'm doing fine. We don't say you're a liar. We go, good. But the Bible doesn't say they will know us by our church hats. It says they will know us by our love. But we've changed the markers. We've changed the identities. We've changed what boundaries we want people to live within. We like to do that because we want a set of rules and guidelines so that we can tell who's in and who's out. I thought it was a very good question I asked last week. How many of you in this room are Amish? How many of you would recognize an Amish person if they walked in? See, because they have this identity marker that sets them apart. And I'm not picking on the Amish. That's just a very good example. Okay? But here's what sets us apart at work. When the boss does something that everybody disagrees with, and you don't agree with it, but you don't let it rock your boat, that's when you set yourself apart from the crowd. That's when you're identified as being crazy. Or you just don't understand, or don't you care. Or, well, if you had my bills, you'd be screaming and hollering at them just like I'm screaming and hollering at them. Because everybody has this full array of excuses and explanations and reasons for why they act unchristian. And when we join in, then you can't tell one spot on a leper from another spot. But Jesus judges us by the heart, not by identity markers. None of us would have looked up at Zacchaeus and said, "Come into your house for dinner." But Jesus looked past his stature, looked past his hiding, and looked at a heart that was interested in the things of the kingdom. And the things of the kingdom involve basically just two things: love God, love others. People who are interested in identity markers, they want to know where you are. Like this debate I was telling you about that Wes and I went to. The guy from the Church of Christ who believed that you can be saved and then not be saved. "Hi, how you doing? I'm doing fine. How you doing? Fine. What's your name?" "Don." "Where are you from?" "Charlotte." "You on my side or his?" First question out of his mouth. Third question out of his mouth. Because we all want to know where everybody fits. I used the example last week about the guy that Lee brought with her. And he's sitting here, you know, and he's looking around and he sees mirrors and he sees banners and he sees children running around and he sees musical instruments. He looks at Charlie and goes, "What kind of church is this?" Because there was no identity marker in his frame of reference for him to be able to say, "This is the kind of church I'm in." But we all want to know, are you Baptist, are you Methodist, are you Presbyterian, or do you believe in immersion, or is it sprinkling? Are you a pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib, no-trib? You know, we got all these thousands of questions that we like to ask in our Christian speakeasy to identify whether or not somebody is with us or not with us. And people who are concerned, well, let me put it this way. Religious people want to know where you are. Do you smoke? Do you drink? Do you run around with them who do? Well, Jesus answered yes to the third question. And it got him in lots of trouble. But Christians ask the next question: where do you want to go? I run into people all the time who are lost as a bug in a rug. They're just happy to be lost. But there are lots of people who have things that are going on in their lives who would like to be different but don't know how. And love says to them, "Let me take your hand and lead you from where you are to where it is your heart wants to go." Christianity is not defined by informed people. That's part of our problem now. We know too much. But information doesn't save us. Christianity is not defined by us being informed. Christianity is not defined by us being conformed. We all cut our hair the same, and we all look the same, and we all speak the same, and we all dress the same. Christianity is defined by transformed people. Amen? All righty. So that brings me up. That was transformation's block number one. Now, this morning, I want to go to block number two. I want to go to block number two and build on top of this first one. But if you don't have the first one, then you're not going to be able to go with me on the second one. Let me get my notes straight here. How do we define a disciple? We define a disciple. Thank you. Someone, this is the definition I want to give you. Someone who lives their life like Jesus would live their life. That's what a disciple is. A disciple is a person who lives their life the identical same way Jesus would live their life. Teresa? A disciple. Teresa is a disciple. When Teresa lives her life the identical same way Jesus would live Teresa's life. Because Teresa's life is different from Judy's life. That's different from Lee's life. That's different from Cindy's life. Okay? So a disciple is not a person who lives their life like somebody else other than Jesus. Okay? So it's not, I want to grow up to be like Don, or I want to grow up to be like Pastor Jim, or I want to grow up to be like Billy Graham. It's, I want to grow up to be like Jesus. Because a disciple lives their life like Jesus would live their life. What the things that concern Edom don't concern me. And the things that concern me haven't even crossed his mind, Nicholas's mind yet. And so a disciple is a person who's letting Jesus live their life. Remember David Carradine in Kung Fu? Ah, grasshopper. This is the kind of relationship we're talking about. Even Grasshopper had all his hair cut off. Why? Because the monk had all his hair cut off. They all dressed the same. They all lived in the same place. And as Grasshopper was growing and maturing to become a master, okay, he did what he was told. And when he asked questions, he was allowed to ask questions. But when he got the answers, he wasn't allowed to debate the answers. Same thing's true about Christianity. It's okay to ask questions, but the answers are not up for debate. The answers are the truth. Whether you like it or not, the truth is still the truth. But you see, it's foreign to our thinking, to thinking about submitting our lives like Grasshopper did to his master. And yet that's exactly what it is I'm calling us to today. Discipleship is not you living your life in Jesus, it's Jesus living His life out through you. And in the show Kung Fu, every decision that Grasshopper made, he made reflecting back, what would my master do? What was it that I learned? What was it that I experienced? How is it that I'm supposed to respond in this situation? Because his life was not his own. His life had been trained to be a life of response to what it was he knew was true. And neither is ours, ladies and gentlemen, any difference. What is a non-disciple then? A non-disciple is a person who's living their life no matter what Jesus would do. Now let's just bring that down right for a moment, right where we live. Make a decision for yourself. I want you to make a decision for the person sitting in your seat. Disciple or non-disciple? Now some of you are going to go, well, I'm going to pick a third choice. Want to be a disciple. Okay, well, we're going to deal with that in just a minute. I don't want to say I'm a disciple, but I certainly don't want to say I'm a non-disciple, so I'm just going to say I'm trying. Okay, well, we're going to deal with that in just a second. But a non-disciple says, I'm going to make my decisions, and it's only after I have royally messed this up that I'm going to call for a counseling session. Or I'm going to holler, God, I don't know why you must not love me. You won't fix this mistake I've made. Now that's not what we say. But that's how we live. I didn't ask you. I didn't care. I didn't listen to your voice. I didn't heed your warnings. I ignored you. And now then all of a sudden, I'm up to my eyeballs. Well, you must not love me because you're not grabbing me by the top of my head and pulling me out. That's good preaching. Thank you very much. The object of Christianity is transformation. We are transformed by being a disciple, but we've got to define discipleship as not me living my life in Jesus, but Jesus living His life out through me. Building block number two. Everybody with me? All right, let's go to building block number three. Number three. Now, I want to take you on a little bit of a mind shift here. How many of you would say that you are trying to live the Christian life? I'm Pastor Don. I'm trying to live the Christian life. How many of you would say that? I know if you're scared, but when I ask questions, don't be scared. Okay, all right. Here's our problem. We need to move from trying to training. We need to move our mindset from trying to training. From trying to training. Let me read to you again. 1 Corinthians 9:24-27. Paul says, "Do you not know that in a race all runners compete, but only one receives the prize? So run your race so that you may lay hold of the prize and make it yours. Now every athlete who goes into training conducts himself temperately and restricts himself in all things. They do it to win a wreath that will soon wither, but we do it to receive a crown of eternal blessedness that cannot wither. Therefore, I do not run uncertainly or without a definite aim." Another, what I used to, and when I was in the positive thinking, motivational mindset camp at one time, we used to say, aim at nothing, hit it every time. That you got to have a goal, because when you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time. That's exactly what Paul says. He says, I don't run without a goal, without an aim. I do not box like one beating the air and striking without an adversary. But, like a boxer, I buffet my body, handle it roughly, discipline it by hardships, and subdue it for fear after preaching to others the gospel and things pertaining to it, I myself should become unfit, not stand the test, be unapproved and rejected as a counterfeit. Now, let me ask you this. If I were to say to you, ladies and gentlemen, the budget of the church is in real bad shape, and we're going to have some kind of a thon to raise money for the church, and we're going to have a rock-a-thon, where we bring in a bunch of rockers and you raise money for how many hours you can sit and rock. How many of you go, I can do that? How many of you can do that? You can sit in a rocking chair and rock. Okay, all right. So if I were to say, okay, here's what we're going to do to help raise some money. We're going to have a stand-a-thon. We're just going to stand with no supports, and you raise money for how many hours you're able to stand. How many of you could stand for hours on end? See? All right, I go, okay, well, that idea didn't go over too well, so I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to have a marathon, and we're going to run 10 miles. And next, and this marathon, because the church budget's in such bad shape, we need the money right away. We're going to do it next Saturday. How many of you will sign up? Maybe. You get the point I'm driving at, though? We're not trained. I mean, we're trained to sit in a rock and rock.
Oh, yeah.
But we're not trained to run. Okay? But if I were to try and run today, and let's put it this way. Just decide in your mind, if I had to run, how far could I run? Well, maybe from here to my office. Maybe. If I had to go to the bathroom, I could run from here to the bathroom. Okay? Or if it was cover dish, I could run from here to the first Sunday school room. Okay? But let's suppose I said, we're going to have this marathon in 6 months. If you honestly worked at it and trained yourself, not could you run the 10 miles? That's not the question I want to ask you. I just want to ask you, if in 6 months from now, could you run further than you can today? Now, this is the difference between trying and training. Well, I can try today, and I can make it from here to my office. I can make no changes and try in 6 months, and I probably won't make it to my office because I'll be just 6 months older.
That's right.
Right? But if I start training, if I start off walking in the evenings, and I stop eating ice cream, which ain't going to happen, I might walk, but we're not quitting the ice cream. Okay? If I started, like Paul said, restricting my body and buffeting it and making it scream out for that ice cream or whatever, you know, I could get further in 6 months than I can today. But you see, our problem is none of us want to say, I'm in training for the Christian life. We just want to say, I'm trying to be a Christian. And what I'm trying to tell you is that in trying 6 months from now, you won't be closer, you'll just be further from it. It's only in training do we get any closer. Yes or no? How then do I become a disciple? Now we've defined what a disciple is. And we have decided that trying to be a disciple is not going to get us there. But that if somebody would show me what needed to be done, if somebody gave me the right exercises. I was thinking about this week. I have a basketball I keep in my office because I just love basketball. And I remember, For as long as I can remember, we used to do all kinds of drills, but not the kind of stuff that if you don't play basketball that you know anything about. I mean, if you don't play basketball and you've seen a game, you've seen them do layups, and you might have seen them a little running exercise they call suicides, you know, and you might have seen some chest passes and stuff like that. But my daddy used to stand and put a basketball on the back of my neck and hold it. And I would stand with my hands down like this. And then he would just remove his hand. He wouldn't say 1, 2, 3 or go. He'd just remove his hand. And my job was to clap my hands in front of myself and then catch that ball right here. And the time it took me for it to fall from my neck to my hips, I was supposed to go and catch that ball. Now, there was a time in my life when I used to do that, when I was that quick. Not that quick anymore. Yeah, back when I could stand on my head. Mike, can you take care of the peanut gallery for me? There was a time when I could walk a mile and dribble the ball between my legs and never miss. There was an exercise that we used to do where we would back up to a wall. Let's say this is a wall right here, and we'd be about this far away from it. And we would take a basketball, and we would start off slow. The first thing you did was you took the ball. See, I can't even hardly get down anymore. But anyway, you take the ball and make sure your knees were close enough that the ball couldn't come up from between your knees. Then we would take the ball, and we would throw it down. It would hit the ground, and you would catch it as it came up behind you. There was a time in my life when I could do that almost so fast you couldn't see it. I could take that ball and just pow, and I mean it just in one motion, that ball go pow, and come up and I catch it right here. I used to be able to dribble it on my finger and move it across three fingers and pat it and it just keep right on going. Back in the day. But you didn't learn that by trying. You didn't learn that by watching football and going, gosh, I wish I could play basketball. You learned that by going, Daddy, I know you're busy, but I want you to hold this on my neck. Or Kent, or Lisa, or Mama, or anybody who'd do it. And you stayed with it, and you stayed with it, and you stayed with it. And no matter how many times, you know, you stood up next to the wall so you didn't have to run the ball down. And granted, when I started, it was like this. Well, actually, it was like... That's how it really was. Okay. But you get to the point where you're, you know, and then it's a little faster, and then it's a little faster, to the place where it was, at one time, almost so fast you couldn't hardly see it. Because I was a disciple of the game. And disciplined in the game. I've shared with you before. You know, I have very little patience with basketball players who can't shoot a free throw. I'm not impressed if you can hit it from 50 feet if you can't hit it from 15. I'm not impressed. I spent hours twirling that thing like this, let it hit the ground, come back up, have it a special way in my hand, bend my knees a certain degree, put my head back, take a look at the edge of that rim, and arc that thing up there. Follow that thing through. Watch it all the way as it went in. But that was after hours and hours and hours of standing out there doing that. But somehow or another, we think of this Christian life as being a life worthwhile, but we don't discipline ourselves in order to be able to do what it is we're supposed to do. So how do I become a disciple? We prepare ourselves to become disciples by way of disciplines. Just like suicides is a discipline, free throws are a discipline, spinning a ball on your fingers is a discipline, learning how to dribble behind your back is a discipline. We used to take a ball, my brother and I, and we would start at our heads, and we would rotate that ball around our heads and then go down to our waist. And then we used to be able to bend all the way down and rotate that ball all the way around and never drop that son of a gun. Never drop it. My parents sent me off to Campbell College one summer to study at a basketball school. And Coach John Wooten was one of our instructors, the famous coach from UCLA. And that was back in the Pistol Pete Maravich day when all of us guys bought brand new socks and cut the elastic out. So that the socks were hung down around your ankles, because that's the way Pistol Pete wore his. Now, back then, you remember, all the basketball players had on these shorts. They were, you know, like this, you know. But they had these socks pulled all the way up to here. Remember that? Well, we used to cut the elastic out so that all the sock was down here. Well, we walked into the gymnasium with John Wooten, and he walked in with a handful of rubber bands. And the first thing he did was have us pull our socks up. Because he wasn't impressed with who you wanted to be. He said to us, if you can play like him, you can wear your socks like him. But until you do, you can wear your socks the way I say. And guess what? All of us did. We prepare ourselves to be a disciple by disciplines. Now, what is a disciplined person? A disciplined person is someone who does, someone who does what needs to be done when it needs to be done. That's what a disciplined person is. A disciplined person is someone who does what needs to be done when it needs to be done. All of us, you know, an undisciplined person is the person that says, I'll get that grass next week. And then next week it's, I'll get that grass next week. And then the third week it's, oh, that grass too high to cut. Isn't that an undisciplined person? Okay. A disciplined person is someone who does what needs to be done when it needs to be done. You do what needs to be done because it needs to be done, not because you want to do it. When John Wooten said, boys, let's run. He didn't say, let's run. He didn't say, how many of you all want to run? Yeah.
Back when you were playing sports, you had to discipline yourself to be able to be accepted on the team. Now, your mama pays the fee and you get to put on the team. So discipline isn't really a big part of sports right now.
Well, that's true. And I quit coaching basketball over that very issue. That, practice ran over because when I was a kid, the last thing you wanted to do was backtalk a coach. But the year I quit over a whole lot of backtalk that when I got it, and of course, when I was a kid, and you, if you were to be stupid enough to backtalk somebody, they just knock you in the head. Okay? So when it got to where you couldn't do that, then you had to do other things. Give me push-ups, give me sit-ups, run the gym or whatever, you know. And we had a bad practice one time, and it ran over, and I had them boys running suicides, and I made this statement. Let's pick the pace up. You're running like a bunch of girls. Now, I got called a whole lot worse than a girl. But you would have thought that I had said something about their mother. The way everybody started, you can't say that to my children. Well, you should hear what your children are saying to me. And you're right. There's this thing now where, you know, let's let everybody play. See, and nobody is challenged anymore to be more than they are. And that's part of our problem in the church, too. A disciplined person, yes. Same principle applies. Same principle. Then what you do is you... That's what it was. Then what you do is you discipline yourself between now and next season to be better than the people who were in front of you. I went to high school with a kid who didn't make the basketball team. And he went to the coach and he said to him, what do you think is the weakest part of my game? The coach said, you won't jump. You won't get up off your feet. That kid worked a whole year on nothing but jumping. And I saw him stop a basketball. You know where the rim is, and you know where the square is behind it. He jumped and planted that ball at the top of that square that's above the rim. And stopped it and pulled that thing down. But nobody gave him anything. He worked from one season to the next season to get it. But see, we don't want to make anybody work for anything anymore. We just want to hand it out. And if it's not handed out to me, then something is not fair with them. What is a disciplined person? Someone who does what needs to be done when it needs to be done. What is a discipline? Something I do by direct effort that I cannot do now by direct effort. A discipline is something I do by direct effort that right now in my life, I cannot do by direct effort. I'll give you an example. I cannot play the piano. But how many of you know that if I put forth effort, I mean, there's nothing about me that physically can keep me from playing the piano. It's not like standing on my head. Thank you. But I could learn to play the piano if I would discipline myself to learn to play the piano. If I would put forth effort, I could do it. So a disciple is someone who does what needs to be done when it needs to be done. And what they do is they do disciplines. They put forth effort. All of those hours of standing outside in the dark, in the cold. If you want to get a good example of what I'm talking about, go to the DVD store and rent the Pistol Pete Maravich story. Did you? It's a great movie, you know, but Pistol Pete is out there playing ball at night in the rain. But he was one of the greatest to ever lace up his Converse and put 2 feet on the floor. Okay, moving right along. Am I saying then that we can be trained to be disciples? Yes, I am. How? There's the $100,000 question. Okay? How? Building block number 4. I said that the objective of the gospel is transformation, that we should be disciples. Building block number 2. Building block number 3 then is that we don't try, we train. How? Number 4. How do we train? Before we talk about that, let's talk about some misconceptions concerning disciplines. Disciplines are uncomfortable. Well, that sort of depends on what you're training for. If I said to you, we're going to have a fundraiser for the church, and it's going to be a pie eating contest. How many of you have your hand up real quick? I want to train for that. Yeah, where do I sign up? Put me top of the list. A common misconception about disciplines is that disciplines are uncomfortable. Disciplines are only uncomfortable for people who don't want to do them. They're only uncomfortable for people who don't want to do them. All of those times, you know, in fact, on my way to basketball practice one time when we lived in Winston-Salem, I fell and broke my hand and went on to practice anyway. Played with a broken hand. Then came home and told my daddy. Of course, he asked the question, why did it happen? I told him, well, when did it happen? Well, about 3 hours ago. And then the next question had a quite louder tone to it. Why did you wait so long to tell us about it? Because I was going to play ball. And in fact, my hand was broke, was unimportant. Didn't bother me in the least little bit. When we moved here from Winston-Salem, the day that we were supposed to have team pictures made for the 9th grade, Northeast Junior High, the day we were supposed to have pictures made, I was in the gym playing ball before school. I was trying to show off in front of a little girl and made a stupid move on the basketball court and twisted my ankle, and I had a swelling jump up as big as my fist on the side of my ankle. I went through the entire day until pictures were made. And then went into the office. Told the secretary in there, I think you need to call my parents. I need to go home. I twisted my ankle. She said, let me see. And all I did was just pull my jeans up. She didn't ask me to pull my sock down. All I did was pull my jeans up. And here's this knot this big sticking off the side of my ankle. She goes, that's enough. Well, we go to the emergency room, and my daddy's sitting. And the nurse says, how did this happen? And I told her. And then she said, when did it happen? And I'm like, oh God, don't make me have to answer that question. Because he's sitting behind me where he can hit me in the back of the head. But you see, a disciplined person, now you got to understand it was a different set of priorities. But the example still holds. A disciplined person, a disciple, does what needs to be done when it needs to be done. What I wanted to get done was I wanted to be in the team pictures. So I suffered through everything I needed to suffer through to make it to the team pictures. But as soon as that picture was taken, I strayed in the office because my other option was either go to the office where I get to go home or go back to class. Well, class was not a discipline I was interested in. Of course, when she asked me what time this happened, I wanted to be in class. We think that disciplines are uncomfortable. But according to Galatians 5, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness. And that's what I'm asking you to practice for. Now, how can we have an objection to that? I think I have that verse there too. Yeah, Galatians 5, 22 through 26. Gentleness, self-control, crucifying the flesh. Well, maybe that's one we do want to leave out. But you see, we have a heart for all these things. We've been trying, but we don't need to try. We need to be trained. The second misconception is that disciplines are what earn us brownie points with God. Because a Christian discipline, let me just give you one so I can use it as an example here. A Christian discipline's prayer.
Well, I pray every day.
Well, maybe you should try not praying one day if you're proud about that. Because praying doesn't earn you brownie points with God. And the other disciplines, and I'm going to go through some of them here in just a minute, but some of the other disciplines, they don't, you can do those disciplines, they don't earn you any brownie points with God whatsoever. God is unimpressed. The third misconception is that disciplines are how we gauge our spiritual life and spiritual condition. Well, Kelly, how you doing? Well, I'm doing just fine. I've been reading my Bible. I've been praying. I've been witnessing at church, at where I work. See, all of those are disciplines. And we gauge our spiritual life, our spiritual condition, our spiritual health by our disciplines. And that is not how you gauge whether or not you're spiritually healthy. There are an awful lot of people who are witnessing at work, who read their Bible, and who pray, and who are going to hell. And Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And so that is not how you judge disciplines. So, here we are. All that was introduction to get us down to here. What are some spiritual disciplines? What are some spiritual disciplines? Well, as I've already shared with you, one of them that the Lord has me in right now is something called slow down. Now, understanding that a disciple is someone who lives their life like Jesus would live their life, then slow down becomes a discipline. Because here's Don. This guy comes running up. He's all hot and he's all sweaty and he's got dust all over him. He goes, "Hey, Don, your friend Lazarus, guess what? He died." You know what Don would do? "Hey, guess who I am? Let's go." But what did Jesus do? He said, "Hey, guess who I am? Let's wait." He got there and announced who he was. "I am." God's just making goosebumps jump up on my legs, about made me cry too. "The resurrection and the life." And he who was dead, though he be dead, shall live again. But it took me 3 days to get here because it took me 3 days to get permission to move. Because I don't live my life by what I see needs to be done. I live my life by what I hear I'm told I can do. But how many of you know our hearing is affected by our speed? Now, I meant to put a disclaimer at the beginning of this part right here. I'm going to give you, I think it's seven of these. How many is on your list? Six. I'm going to give you six of these. And I want no one in this room. I don't want anyone in this room at the end of today's service to go, I'm going to do these. I'm going to do these. Maybe pick one. Really what I'd like for you to do is give it a week and think about it. And then let God pick one for you. Or let God give you a different one. Because then we're certainly not going to be able to talk about them all. Okay? But here's what I'm trying to tell you. When it came to a clutch three throw, the coach looked down the bench and went, "Hey, Hall." Why? Because Hall had spent 500 hours shooting free throws. Now, I didn't hit them all, but I was more likely to hit it than anybody else. But the free throw shooting didn't do me a bit of good if I didn't get in the game and win the game with a free throw shot. The game, ladies and gentlemen, is this: love God, love others. But how we prepare for the game is to slow down long enough to love God. That's why a spiritual discipline is not a brownie point. God says, you can be just as disciplined as you want to be. But if you're not in the game, God says, you're not earning any brownie points with me standing out there shooting 100 free throws. If when I call your name and tell you to get in the game, you go, well, I don't know if I want to do that or not. I don't want that pressure. I don't want to be put in that spotlight. Pick somebody else. Liza, she's better at that than I am. Get her to do it, God. So you can slow down as you drive up and down the boulevard. Here's your slow down. You ready? Now, nobody's going to want to hear this one, so you're not ready, okay? But I'm going to give it to you anyway. Instead of walking down 50 registers to see which one's shortest, just get in line. Just get in line. And just wait your turn. I ain't got time for that. And therein is our problem. Therein is our problem. Let me give you a second discipline. Confession. Why is confession important? Well, let me tell you why. Because the secrets you keep are the most dangerous thing you keep. The secrets you keep, they're the most dangerous thing you keep. Now, I'm not saying jump up in church and tell everybody everything. There is a word called discretion. Okay? But we have a whole lot less problem with that. And we also have a problem with, well, nobody knows. At least I'm not acting on what I'm thinking. So I guess it's okay to think it. Well, everybody has bad thoughts. Everybody does bad things. Well, I love this one. Nobody's perfect. Somehow or another, that's an excuse for us. And here's the one that gets under my skin. Well, we're all human. No, we're all subhuman. Is what we all are. Until you come to Jesus and He makes you human. There's nothing wrong with being human. Adam pre-sin was human. Adam after sin was subhuman. But confession is a discipline that keeps the secrets from piling up on the inside of us. Secrets are like mushrooms. They love dark, moist places. And we need to have such a relationship with the Lord, and it would also be good to have a relationship with a person. To where you, because the Scriptures do say, one of the disciplines of the Scriptures is confess your faults one to another. And that's a spiritual discipline. Number three, solitude and silence. It's recorded a dozen times, and it's so funny. The disciples will, they'll not be slowing down, and all of a sudden, every time I turn around, the guy is missing. And where will he be? By himself. There are an awful lot of people who cannot stand to be by themselves. And if I've got to be by myself, for God's sake, I don't want to be quiet. Got to have TV on, got to have radio on. There was a time in my life when I was so unhappy with myself, I could have the TV on and the radio on and be reading a book. And never even hear the others. They're just white noise. That's the term we use today. They're just that background stuff, you know? But you know, now I'm gonna step in it just a little bit, if I haven't already. Which it won't be a good sermon if we don't step in it a little bit, will it? Sometimes in our praise and worship, it'll get real quiet. And the people who can't stand solitude will do something spiritual. Because got to have something happening. That's discipline number two. That's good for you. Just try. If this is the one the Lord leads you to, just try sitting in your room on the edge of the bed and just sit. Well, I ain't got time for that. That goes back to number one. But you see, one of the disciplines of the Scriptures is this: be still. And there's a certain knowledge you can get. The inference is that thing you can learn being still can't be learned not being still. That just came to me. That's good, isn't it? That's real good. That was not in my notes. But it should have been. Be still and know that I am God. Well, if I'm going to sit still, should I take my Bible? If you want to. On those, and I'm going to be honest with you, in those rare occasions when I've done this, that's honest, isn't it?
That's very honest.
I've taken a notepad because here's what I find happens. When I get quiet, the devil wants to tell me things I have not thought about in a long time that I needed to do. And so I'll take a notepad and I'll write that thought down and I'll set the notepad back down and I'll just sit real quiet. I'm kind of like, thank you, devil, for reminding me of that. I'll get to that, but I'll do it later. And then I'll just sit, and something else crossed my mind, and I'll just jot that down real quick, and then I'll just sit. But what most people do is they go, oh, I do need to get that done, don't I? we're sitting real still. And the devil goes, did you cut the stove off? I better go check it. And he knows good and doggone solid well you cut that stove off. He's just happy to watch you jump. Number four, prayer. Prayer is a discipline. It's something you practice. What is a discipline? A discipline is something I do. I forgot my definition. By purpose, that right now, by purpose, I cannot do. The more you pray, the more easier praying becomes. The more you sit in silence, the easier it is to be silent. The more you slow down, the easier it is to slow down. But what we'd rather do is we'd rather set our own paces and do our own things and be our own people and then fit Jesus in every chance we get. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get us to see this thing the other way around. Number five, servanthood. This falls under the love God, love others. Most people, though, are so wrapped up and what it is they've got to do, or how much they've got to do, or how they wish somebody was doing something for them, they don't take any time to do anything for anybody else. Will you admit with me that all of us in this room are probably more selfish than we'd like to admit to? And servanthood is a discipline where we look around and we say, who can I bless today? But we're so busy with God bless my day that we don't have time to say, in this day, God, use me as a blessing. Number six. A spiritual friend. Somebody who's a sounding board. You know the old expression? A fool, it's a judicial expression. How's it go? A fool, a man who represents himself has a fool for an attorney. A man who represents himself has a fool for an attorney. Or I think it's, no, if he's representing himself, it's a fool for as an attorney. Yeah, has a fool for an attorney. The same thing is true if we are trying to live the Christian life without somebody else beside of us. Now, preferably, if you're married, it'd be good for that to be your spouse. Okay? But all of us need a friend. All of us need somebody that we feel like that we can trust. Exactly. And who will hear us out and who will keep a confidence. We all need a friend. But we have to discipline ourselves to do that because we're too busy to have friends. I'll give you one more that's not on the overhead. Secrecy is a spiritual discipline. Yeah, well, it's not. I don't have an overhead. It's not on the overhead. Secrecy is a spiritual discipline. Jesus said, when you give alms, do this. When you help somebody out, don't tell anybody. It's a disciplining of that thing that's right behind your lips. And I'm going to tell you something. It doesn't come under subjection because it lays down sides and says, I cry, uncle. It has to be trained. And don't hand me, well, I'm trying to control my tongue. No, because we've already learned that doesn't work. In fact, okay, this is one of our zoom, zoom, zoom moments. You ready? Eliminate the word try out of your vocabulary. Eliminate the word try out of your vocabulary. I'm not trying to be a Christian. I'm in training to be a Christian. And for those of you who are concerned about the discussion that's going on some level here at the church about falling from grace, let me say this. Get in there and train, you won't have anything to worry about. You won't have anything to worry about. Now, if all you want to do is try, you might want to double check a thing or two. But I'm going to tell you something. I've got... How long have we lived in our house now, baby? Where we are now?
3 years.
Okay. For 3 years, I've had right at... And I spend hours at my desk. And at my feet are two, I think they're 15 or 25 pound barbells. And guess how many times I've picked them up in 3 years? None. Except maybe to vacuum under them or to dust them up. Yeah, vacuum and dust because I'm a neat freak, okay? That's the only time they ever get picked up. I had good intentions. When I put them there, when I took them out of the warehouse we were moving from, and was, you know, brought them. I had all the best intentions in the world. I was going to try.
I moved them. They're not even there now.
I don't even know they were not there. And see, we want God to give us credit because 3 years ago we were going to try. But guess what? 3 years later, my arms are not any stronger because of my trying. But they would be stronger if I had been in training. Zoom, zoom, zoom. Eliminate the word try out of your vocabulary when you're talking about your relationship with Jesus. We're not trying anything, we're training. Anyone have a question? Okay. Let me close with my disclaimer again then. Do not run out of here going, oh, he gave us seven disciplines. I can't wait to start. Okay. That's the pie eating contest where instead of starting off with one slice, we start off with five pies at one time. Okay. The reason why people quit exercising is because they go at it too fast, too hard, too soon, and all of a sudden, everything hurts. My legs hurt, my back hurts, my head hurts, my arm hurts. And so what we do is we quit. And then when somebody asks us about it, we go, here's what we go, it was too hard. No, you did it wrong. You did it wrong. Don't run out of here going, I've got seven disciplines. I'm going to be a healthy Christian monk next week. It's not happening. In fact, I would prefer if you just meditate on it for the next week and let it just sort of settle in. And so let me bring this thing now in full circle. Well, preacher, I understand what you're saying. Because on the back side of that's a tone that says, but I have no intentions of doing anything. You hear that tone? I understand what you're saying. But, well, remember that what started us on this is, thou shalt love the Lord thy God more than anything else. More than getting through the checkout line at Walmart. More than beating the traffic down 74 to get back to Monroe this afternoon so I can be there in time enough for the kickoff. More than running by somebody who could have used a kind word had I been kind enough to let the Holy Spirit tell me, speak to that one. But it's time, you know, and it's not, Charlie, it's not a boot camp. You know, in boot camp, you went from getting out of high school and sleeping till 9 to getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and at 4 o'clock in the morning, okay, at 4 o'clock, that's right, you were in the military too, at 4 o'clock in the morning and running 5 miles. You know, and they didn't let you run half a mile today and then a mile tomorrow. It was 5 miles today. Okay, Jesus is not inviting us to boot camp. He's inviting us to training camp. You know that in training camp for the Panthers, they don't wear shoulder pads? Did you know that? They don't start you off with all of that stuff on top of you, with all that on you. They're in shorts, and they're wearing a now they are wearing their helmets, but that's just to protect their heads, okay? But they're not dressed up on the first day of training camp like they are on the first day of the game. But how many of you know that they would have a miserable game had they not had training camp? And seeing therein lies, ladies and gentlemen, where I think we are falling flat on our faces in our lives. Our lives are miserable. Most peoples who call themselves Christians. Their lives are miserable. Because they've never been through training camp. They've not exercised the what we think is that they don't have anything going bad. But actually, what Jesus says to us is that in this world you're going to have. But even when you got those things, your life can be going well. And I just spent the last hour and 15 minutes talking about a lot of things. I could spend the next 4 hours telling you about things I'm concerned about in my world. But if you want my world in a nutshell, things are great. Not because everything's okay, but because Jesus is in charge of everything. But do you know where you learn that? You learn that when you're sitting on the edge of your bed and He goes, I'm going to take care of this. Actually, that's not true. You learn this when you're sitting on the edge of your bed and you hear Him say, you're mine. Because when He says, you're mine, everything else just goes right out the door. He didn't have to promise me anything else other than you're mine. And that takes care of it. So will you this coming week? Next week we'll start on commandment number 2. Right off the top of my head, I don't remember what it is. Because I hadn't studied for it. I don't study in advance. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven images. Well, that'll be interesting. I'll look, see what I learn about that this week. But law number 1 has to do with gratitude. Remember that? And we show our ungratefulness by not being in the game that Jesus died that we might be able to win. And because we don't discipline ourselves, then we like Paul said, I discipline myself, I discipline my body. I tell my body it can't do certain things and it must do other things. Because when it comes time for me to lay this body down, I don't want to be found as a reprobate. I don't want to have to stand before Jesus and Jesus say, I never knew you. And the Christian life is not lived by trying. It's lived by training. Let's pray.